The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
That, I'll take your questions. I've been given a list of people to call on here. I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president. And I might add, there are at least five presidents running or incumbent presidents who had lower numbers than I have now, later in the campaign.
You mixed up presidents Zelensky and Putin earlier today. And you now have sort of your key allies, including the British Prime Minister, the President of France, and the German Chancellor having to step in and make excuses for you on that. And officials here are saying off the record that your decline has become noticeable. Hasn't this now, frankly, become damaging for America's standing in the world? Thank you.
Did you see any damage to our standing in my leading this conference? Have you seen a more successful conference? What do you think? We haven't had an incredibly successful conference. How many times did you hear in that conference, I know it sounds too self-serving, but other leaders, heads of state, in thanking me, saying the reason we're together is because of Biden, because Biden did the following. Look, folks, this is a... Well, anyway, guess what? Find me an economist, a mainstream economist, who said we haven't done well. What have we not done that isn't working right now?
There's been reporting that you've acknowledged that you need to go to bed earlier and your evening around 8.
That's not true. Look, what I said was, instead of my every day starting at 7 and going to bed at midnight, it'd be smarter for me to pace myself a little more. If I slow down, I can't get the job done. That's a sign that I shouldn't be doing it. But there's no indication of that yet. None. What do I got here? Merrick, Pulaski Radio. I love my staff, but they add things. They add things all the time. At the very end. I'm catching from my wife for that. Anyway. I'm following the advice of my commander in chief, the chief of staff of the military. And I've spent more time with Xi Jinping than any world leader has. Over 90 hours since being vice president all the way through, for real. And by the way, I handed all my notes. And I think you'll see that. Look, like I said, Assam from NPR.
Thank you, Mr. President. Asma Khalid with NPR.
I mean, I my numbers are better in Israel than they are here. But then again, they're better than a lot of other people here, too. But anyway, most presidential historians give me credit for having accomplished more than most any president since Johnson and maybe before that.
Are you open to taking another physical or test before the election? Governor Whitmer of Michigan, for instance, said it wouldn't hurt to take a test.
Well, look, two things. One, I've taken 3 significant and intense neurological exams by a neurologist.
This was supposed to be the big boy press conference. And we see there still heavily scripted, going to all of the go-to leftist reporters. No questions for Fox News or any other conservative outlets. And we went in, too, thinking that the mainstream, the regime media would really go hard against him. And they really didn't. I mean, they talked about his cognitive decline in some ways, but they didn't come at him and go straight after him, because so many of them want to see someone else. It's amazing. This is the most, it doesn't even seem real, this news cycle. What's been playing out for these last few weeks. We'll continue to give it the coverage that it deserves, because these certainly are momentous and significant times. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Just had a lecture for the youths, the teenagers at God's Camp, SEP, Summer Educational Program. So I stayed in the camp t-shirt, although I forgot about clipping on the microphone. Hopefully it won't rub too much against my, I feel a little bit of feedback or hear a little bit of feedback, but we'll see how everything goes. My voice is still not all there. Occasionally I'll hit some pretty big coughing fits. So if that happens, we might be ready to go away quickly to a promo. But as I keep saying, for the most part, I feel much, much better. Just got to get those vocals back. You can get to the live video stream of this show at trumpetdaily.com, also at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily. So the coverage, again, it's all over the map. The Democrat Party divided like never before. Quite a few of them want a new candidate. And then there's those, certainly those that are close to Joe Biden. They're digging in their heels. First, some of the coverage. This is Charles Blow at the New York Times. The strongest case for Biden is his resilience in the face of the onslaught. Here's a guy saying, it's remarkable, really, what we're seeing. He's so resilient. It says here, Joe Biden is still standing, refusing to bow out. He reiterated that once again in a lengthy and mostly successful news conference. I mean, the bar now is so low. As long as it's not as bad as that debate, that 90-minute debate, it's a success. It's a success. It's remarkable to watch. He's so resilient. Says some may view it as selfish and irresponsible. Some may even see it as dangerous, the fact that he would stay in the race. But I see it as remarkable. They really, you know, even the questions, you can tell the reporters are really, they're uneasy. Because they know that Biden's going to lose, but they're so used to protecting and shielding Democrats, all of them, from the dear leader on down, that even after they've turned on the fake president of the United States, they can't go after him. They can't aggressively go out. And it was so quiet. Biden walks into the room after he announced, you know, Zelensky as President Putin. He goes into the room and it's like a morgue. It's dead quiet. I mean, if they were going after Trump for a debate performance, you can be sure there would be some electricity in the air from the beginning. Not so yesterday. Again, the reporters treated him very nicely. Everything was scripted. Which reporter to call on? Who knows? Who knows if Biden already knew what the questions would be? We've had reports, the radio interview that he gave recently, where the interviewer said, yeah, they submitted some questions to the station, and we took them. So they knew, half the time he knows in advance, even when it's supposed to be a big boy presser, even when he's supposed to really put on a display like never before, totally unscripted. Andrew Bates, he's a White House senior deputy press secretary. So I guess he's up above KJP. But he tweets out as the presser was coming to an end, to answer the question on everyone's minds, no, Joe Biden does not have a doctorate in foreign affairs. He's just that bleeping good. I'll leave out the cursing. He's just that good. In other words, this is phenomenal. These are his handlers. Biden's going away from a presser like this to his wife and to this guy Bates, to Hunter. And you know what they're all saying to him? That was fantastic. It's just like they did after the debate. His wife said that to him after the debate. That was fantastic. These people have spent so long, like Joel Hilliker wrote earlier this week, they've spent so much time in a world of lies that they... They believe their own lies. They really believe it. This divide, by the way, between the Bidens and the Obamas, I mean, how significant is that? I know I covered some of that with you earlier in the week, the quotes from America Under Attack and what my father writes here about Obama and the prophecy in Amos 7. He says, consider the power Barack Obama wields. Talks about Zuckerberg, Zuckerbucks, all the ways they manipulated the election. It says, with control of the mainstream media, Barack Obama has monstrous influence. What happened to the political Antiochus? In other words, when you get to the middle of Amos 7, where does that political Antiochus go? He just kind of disappears from the scene. And we may be witnessing that disappearance even as we speak. Obama, I mean, he's sending his people out there. George Clooney's not going to write an op-ed for the New York Times without getting Obama's approval. The dear leader was behind that, for sure. Clooney, he's with Biden 3 weeks ago. He pulls in $28 million for Biden, and now he says he's mentally unfit. Just a couple weeks later, what happened? Why didn't you say it when Obama let him off stage like he had a dog on a leash? They didn't say any. When it was time to cover it up, they all covered it up. And when it's time to throw him under the bus, if the dear leader says to do that, then it's time to throw him under the bus. But he's not exactly been taken out of the race. When have we ever seen a prominent Democrat going up against not just the Republican Party, but the regime media and all the Obama people in his own party, the Democrat Party? When you view it through the lens of Amos 7, it begins to make sense. Says, from Amos 7:7 on, we see no hint of the political Antiochus, Barack Obama. Will God remove him when Jeroboam wars to recover what's his? Is God removing him? What a position for the talking heads in the regime media. For so many years, they swooned before the dear leader. They swooned. They know Obama wants him out. I've got the receipts. I'll play the montage in a little bit. We played the one from Morning Joe the other day where Joe goes after Obama. We've never seen this happen. Never seen anything like it. White House guests recount concerns after seeing Biden weeks before the debate. What we witnessed was troubling. Now they come forward. Now they knew, a few of them, even before the debate. Okay. They're all over the map, as I say. Then you have the Clooney op-ed just a couple days ago. All the Obama bros throwing them under the bus. Obama's people. This one from the New York Times. Biden's moment. There's one like Charles Blow that sees last night as a wonderful success story for Joe Biden. Another headline in the New York Times this morning. Biden has slips but shows strength on foreign policy. I mean, the New York Times has gone hard after Biden over the last couple weeks. But even the New York Times said, you know, he did pretty well. He's really good on foreign policy. I mean, this is a specialty. Listen to the talking heads, the ones that weren't so excited or aren't so excited about Biden going forward, their reaction to last night, clip 7.
I'd like to get your take on the press conference and whether or not that did anything to change your mind, perhaps, about how you feel about President Biden.
Unfortunately, no, it didn't do much to change my mind.
Do you think that President Biden can beat Donald Trump?
No.
I don't know of a job interview that you could have gone on and delivered the performance that was delivered by Joe Biden and gotten a job. And I'm not talking about the presidency. I'm talking about, like, cashier at Home Depot.
I don't know what his aides are telling him, but he's in a very tough spot right now to win this election. And if they're not telling him that, they're doing a disservice to him.
It's not clear that this has reached the president himself.
That he has a very narrow path, if any path at all, to win, and that they will go down with him. There is the depth of the conviction on that front among Democratic members of the Democratic Senate caucus is almost total, and in the House it's not quite as close to unanimous, but it's very high.
Right now he's being cannibalized by his own party, by different rumors mm-hmm. and by different various senators and congresspeople saying, you know, it's time for him to leave.
You still think that Biden's going to lose after today?
We had a good discussion in there, and I've got to get in here.
Do you stand by your past comments?
I stand by my comments.
It was hard to watch. Yet another hard-to-watch Biden event, and it doesn't make me... I'm not sad, and I'm not laughing at it. I'm actually pretty mad. I'm mad at Joe Biden and Democrats because I gave them my first Democratic vote in 2020 with the express understanding and promise that he would be a one-term president put there to get Trump out. He did it. That's why I voted for him. That they are sticking with this man is infuriating, irresponsible, and it's political malpractice.
What exactly would the Biden folks say that they are trying to prove by doing these interviews? That he can handle, it wasn't unscripted, and then it was like retrofitted to what they wanted him to say, so that it proves none of what they were actually trying to prove.
A longtime Biden advisor just texted me. I just think there's an unfortunate inevitability to all this. I'm angry at his inner circle who have not served him well and at times committed malpractice in their service. And I am frustrated at the family, the Biden family, for not expanding the circle so there would be at least a truth teller or two in their midst. They created a perfect storm of an echo chamber, and it is biting them all in the...
He has to get it right every time for the next 4 months. And that is not something that Democrats, including people who are working and like the president and support him and want him to win this race, they just don't believe that he has the capacity to do over the next 4 months. And they don't think that this is winnable.
A lot of them, as one of them said, they're angry. They understood it to just be one term. So now, I mean, they've been misled. They've been deceived. The media talking about the echo chamber that's around Joe Biden. The echo chamber accusing Joe Biden of being trapped in an echo chamber. This is from CNN. Angry and stunned Democrats blame Biden's closest advisors for shielding public from full extent of president's decline. They've been shielded. They've been lied to. They didn't see any of this. The whole world sees it. The whole world does. The Telegraph says it openly in its pages today. It's so obvious. But here's the media trying to save face, trying to tell you, hey, we were just after the truth all along. But they lied to us. I love this exchange between Jake Tapper and one of his reporters. I think Sam might have played this for you yesterday, clip 8.
In response to those comments from George Clooney, Jake, a campaign official who attended that Los Angeles fundraiser tells me that George Clooney left 3 hours before the president. So clearly the gloves are off, Jake.
What does that mean that George Clooney left 3 hours? What's the point?
The point of that is to suggest that Biden's stamina is better than Clooney's, and Clooney didn't have, you know, eyes on the entire event. That's the response to the Clooney op-ed.
Okay.
I don't think Jake's buying it. Okay, he's got better stamina than Clooney. He's resilient, says the New York Times op-ed. Resilience, stamina. It's remarkable. How does this continue? We're 115 days out, and the reason you're hearing Joe Biden speak so confidently of his campaign or him staying in the race is because he knows it's too late for another option. He knows he's just got to get to the convention and he's good to go. And through it all, you've got these people panicking openly on their platforms. Listen to Jon Stewart as he went on and on The Late Show the other night, clip 4.
Perhaps this chart will illustrate and illuminate the point more clearly. For instance, in 2022, when we saw Biden give a shout out to Representative Jackie.
Representative Jackie, are you here? Where's Jackie? I didn't think she was going to be here.
Unfortunately, Jackie was dead. It's something that the president seemed to have known 6 weeks earlier when he released a condolence statement about her death. So, huh. Then there was the recounting of a recent conversation that the president had had with his counterpart, the president of France.
And Mitterrand from Germany, I mean, from France, looked at me and said, you know, how long are you back for?
Unfortunately, Mitterrand is also dead. For longer even than that first lady, so. Huh. And even on teleprompter, things continue to, huh. Like the reading of the instructions people sometimes add to teleprompter scripts.
The percentage of women who registered to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line. At the Catholic school I went to was a guy named Riley, last name. Four more years. Pause.
But then the debate happened and we kind of, what? What is, what?
Babylon Bee, the satire site, they've got it right. Media who refuse to report on Biden's decline are furious that nobody reported on Biden's decline. Now you've got Jon Stewart, the funny man. He's losing the funny man, by the way. The late night talk show hosts. Biden's losing them. But here's Jon Stewart going back now and showing that, look, this was a big problem well before the debate. Now they tell us. It shows just how corrupt and self-serving these talking heads are. He was in a basement from the beginning. And Obama, I mean, he laid it out. Yeah, I'd love to run it from the basement with the fake guy wearing a little earpiece. And a lot of people speculate that that may be literally happening, that he may have an earpiece. They've said the quiet part out loud. But the regime media, you see, they've got their precious narratives and they march to the orders that the dear leader sets. And the dear leader for years said everything's perfect. He's better than ever. That's what Joe Scarborough said 2 seconds ago. Now he's singing a different tune. So many of them are. Some of them are coming out with a brutal monologue, like you just heard there from Stewart. Listen to Jen Psaki. She's now on MSNBC. She used to speak for Biden. Clip 3.
Is the White House and the campaign ready for this moment, which is news is breaking every hour about the president and about your campaign? Are they ready for this? Because the last 3 years, I don't want to say have been easy because they're never easy, I know, but they've been nothing like this.
It's so interesting. It's an interesting question because it's like, what does it mean to be ready for it, right? I mean, they have to be. They don't really have another choice. I think that the question is, what is the plan moving forward? And I think 99% of them don't know the answer to that question.
It's all over the map, isn't it? A lot of people don't know what to do. They don't know if they can do anything. The split between the Bidens and the Obamas. Who would have ever called that unless you understand a little bit about Amos 7 and you've read America Under Attack? Fox News, Obama silent over reports he's working behind the scenes to force Biden out of the 2024 race. The dear leader won't even come forward and deny it. He's just silent. And you see more and more of these talking heads like Joe Scarborough saying, yeah, Obama's behind all this. He's behind the attacks on Biden. Former President Obama is keeping tight-lipped following reports that he is working behind the scenes to force Biden out of the 2024 presidential race. Multiple media outlets reported Thursday morning on Obama's alleged efforts including Politico, says here, while Obama did not encourage or advise Clooney to say what he said, he also didn't object to it, the report said. MSNBC's Joe Scarborough went a step further, saying on Morning Joe, a favorite program of Biden's, that what's going on behind the scenes is the Biden campaign and many Democratic officials do believe that Barack Obama is quietly working behind the scenes to orchestrate this. He's orchestrating all of it. And yet it's not working, at least not yet. Biden won't step down. Biden won't move out of the way. Listen to this montage we put together, the talking heads commenting on what this article just brought out. Clip six.
This wasn't George Clooney.
What do you mean?
This wasn't. Come on.
Who do you think it was? Matt Damon?
It was not Matt Damon.
Who do you think
it was? It wasn't Julia Roberts either.
Who do you think it was? You can say the name. It's not Voldemort. Are you saying you think Barack Obama put him up to this?
I think that Barack Obama has a lot of influence, and I think that there's a lot there.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there, Willie. And going behind the scenes is the Biden campaign and many Democratic officials do believe that Barack Obama is quietly working behind the scenes to orchestrate this.
Now, I question whether George Clooney has really spent a lot of time with President Biden in person.
I don't like that George Clooney did this. I don't like that George Clooney aired this dirty laundry to the world.
Now, who's he going to listen to, Jill or George Clooney? I'm telling you, it's personal. He's had the elite, and it's so true about the elite. He is absolutely right about the elite. Look at President Obama. He served for 8 years loyally, and yet Obama backed Hillary Clinton for president and didn't back him. But I hear he never even invited him upstairs. He had a good reason to be resentful, but he isn't. He puts up with it, and in this elite-fashioned attack on him, they're going to pay for it.
Look, both Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi, they are two stalwart leaders of the party right now. They, even though they don't hold the titles anymore they once had, they are still behemoths when it comes to their ability to persuade.
We are learning tonight that throughout the course of this week, as we've seen the public words from former Speaker Nancy Pelosi, we're learning that she has had a private conversation earlier this week with former President Barack Obama. They have talked about this matter. We do not know exactly the contents of that private conversation, but we do know, talking to a variety of Democrats in a news story just posted moments ago, Isaac DeVera and I talked to many Democrats who are looking to Pelosi and Obama to sort of find a way out of this infighting and crisis that has dominated the Democratic Party. But the new information we are learning that she has had a conversation, perhaps more than one of them, with Barack Obama. Of course, this is very fraught for former President Barack Obama. He has a friendly and loyal relationship with President Biden, but it's also a searing one dating back to 2015 when he urged him not to run for president then against Hillary Clinton. That still hangs over all of this. I'm told he does not want to be too assertive. He does not want to push too much. But it is clear that many Democrats are looking to them to sort of find a way out here.
Many Democrats looking to Obama to find a way out. And then remarkably, you've got some like Chris Matthews. That blows you away. You see him talk, or rather defending Biden, saying that this is personal, saying that the people that work against Biden, they're going to pay for it. I mean, this is the same guy who got the thrill up his leg when he heard Obama speak. He was like the lead swooner. And now even some of them are turning on the dear leader. And all of them see that this attack on Biden, it's orchestrated by Barack Hussein Obama. Will it succeed? Is there a pathway that actually sees Joe Biden step aside and hand it over either to Kamala or one of the other candidates that have been put forward? Listen to Newt Gingrich on Hannity discuss how unlikely it seems like that would be. Clip five.
Operation Destroy and Dump Joe Biden is underway. It looks like it's being led by Obama. Will they be successful?
If Biden doesn't want to leave, I don't see any mechanism to make him leave. He got over 14 million votes. Nobody else got any significant number. All these people out there now. So we're supposed to be told that 14 million Democrats around the country don't matter because the senator from Vermont would like Biden to step down. Well, talk about not being part of democracy. You know, the Democrats have spent 3 years talking about how much they love democracy, except when it's inconvenient. If Biden, put yourself in Biden's shoes. He's very angry. He feels he's been betrayed by Obama. He feels that the elites, and he says this, that all the elites who he thought were his friends have turned on him. But he's in the White House. He's got 14 million votes. He has virtually every delegate. So they have to create an uprising, which leads over half the delegates to break their word and decide they're going to dump Biden. Is every time somebody walks in and says you ought to leave, they just check off enemy, enemy, enemy. And remember, the cognitive decline he's getting very often manifests itself as anger and as rejection of reality. So anybody who's dealt with a relative who said these kind of problems knows they can get very stubborn. They can suddenly have bursts of temper. And my guess is that Joe Biden, if Barack Obama went to see him tomorrow, Biden would just say, I am really deeply disappointed in you. I served you loyally, and you stabbed me in the back.
Wow. That's some pretty sharp commentary there. Coming from a guy, by the way, who's 81, Newt Gingrich, he's still sharp as a tack mentally. It's not even an age thing. He's the same age as Joe Biden, but in the case of Biden, he's got the degenerative brain disease. He's got a disease. He's got a problem. And everyone now sees it. But isn't it, again, I've talked some about God when he turns the tables, even the sense of humor that he has. But the very cognitive decline that makes you stubborn and angry at times, or can at least, could that be contributing to the Biden camp digging in their heels and then going and telling this person, as his closest advisors have been doing, this person with a degenerative brain disease, that you're doing great. The polls say you're going to beat Trump. That was a wonderful debate. He believes it. He believes it. It would be easy for his handlers to shut out some of the noise coming from the larger Democrat Party. There's people in the regime media now who are laughing at Barack Obama. This never happened. We have never seen this happen. Is God in the process of removing him, silencing him, blotting him out in the way that the dear leader tried to blot out even the name of Israel? They've gone from swooning. You know, all the dear leader had to do was just give you a look. And they fell in line, the regime. They would fall in line. They treated him with kid gloves. No angry or contentious questioning of the dear leader. But now look, Obama is in a difficult position right about now. They've got 115 days to sort this out. And then you look at what the world sees, all these world leaders gathering for that NATO conference. All these world leaders that have come forward now and said, yeah, we actually have witnessed the decline for years now. We've seen it up close and personal. I mentioned this Telegraph piece. Biden looks finished. There's surely no coming back from this. This is in response to yesterday's presser. So you've got some still saying, hey, it was great. At least it wasn't as bad as the debate. Here's someone across the pond writing for the Daily Telegraph. The president had a chance to show his big boy credentials, but he just made America look like an international joke. If Joe Biden wanted to design a pair of gaffes to cause his presidency as much damage as possible, it would be hard to do better than his performance on Thursday night. Just riddled with gaffes, as you saw in the cold open. This NATO summit in Washington has already been overshadowed by questions about the U.S. president's age and mental capacity, and every world leader has been asked about it in interviews here. Every world leader has been asked, has been pressed on this subject. 2 miles away on Capitol Hill, Democrats have been locked in a conclave all week to discuss what to do about Mr. Biden and his health. The Democrats are panicking. The regime media is all over the map. The dear leader's pushing out, you know, his sycophants like George Clooney. Again, then you've got the ones up close to Biden saying, this is just how good he is. He is, I mean, he's nailing it. He's hitting it out of the park. Biden has been living in a world of lies for so long, he apparently believes his own lies. That's how Mr. Hilliker put it in the trumpet brief earlier this week. He believes it. He believes it. That's what we're surrounded by. Truth fails, like Isaiah 59 says. Truth has been cast to the ground. But just stepping back, you see how world leaders are reacting to this. European leaders are having to take questions on this now. But look at the dearth of quality leadership, not just in the United States. You've got the United States being led by a fake president who's got dementia. Canada, our neighbor to the north, I mean, Trudeau is deeply unpopular, a lame duck leader, a communist one at that. And then you've got the new radical leftist leadership in the UK. You've got all of the political turmoil that's been going on in France for the last few weeks. Newsweek and just talking about this crisis in leadership. And you know what this is setting the stage for prophetically. The strong man, God's not just clearing the way for Jeroboam to return here in the States. There's another Daniel 8 strong man that's going to emerge in Europe, that's going to capitalize on this crisis in leadership. Newsweek says here, as President Joe Biden and U.S. officials get down to business with NATO allies in Washington, D.C. this week, one question lurks over the entire proceedings. Is there any head of state in Europe who can actually claim a leadership role on the continent? There's a crisis in leadership across the pond as well. And they're going to have to stand against some of the kings of the East that actually are pretty strong men, Putin, Xi, and so on. It says France, Germany, and the UK, commonly viewed as Europe's three biggest powers, are all in the midst of various degrees of political dysfunction. Economic malaise and broader disenchantment with their respective electorates. The stage is being set perfectly for the emergence of a European strongman. And we know where that advances us, prophetically speaking. Well, as far as the big picture with prophecy is concerned, if you haven't requested it already, check out the United States and Britain in Prophecy. And then speaking of the European strongman, this is a great little booklet as well. The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. There is to be one more seventh and final resurrection of this empire to emerge out of the heart of Europe. We've got a lot more to give you on today's show. We've got our weekly installment of World Watch coming up after the break. And then we've got another installment from the recent public appearance campaign that I gave in Phoenix, Arizona, just a couple weeks ago. So this will be the third and final installment that will slip in there for today's Bible study segment. When you come back, or I should say, when we come back, we'll go right into World Watch. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com.
North Korea successfully tested a new tactical ballistic missile that can carry a 4.5-ton super-large warhead, North Korea's state agency KCNA reported on July 2nd. Likely referring to the same test, South Korea said Pyongyang launched two ballistic missiles, one of which exploded over land. South Korea claims its northern neighbor is exaggerating the capability of its missiles amid an arms race between the two countries. Numerous Bible prophecies foretell a multinational Asian alliance led by Russia that will use its missiles and nuclear weapons to wage the largest war mankind has ever seen. To learn more about North Korea's role in this alliance, read our free booklet, Russia and China in Prophecy. The European Union opened membership talks with both Moldova and Ukraine on June 25th, signaling that the nations of Europe intend to continue supporting Ukraine in its war against Russia. Ukraine will have to make far-reaching reforms before it meets EU standards, and candidates for EU membership need approval from all 27 EU member states in each step of the accession process. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who just took over the six-month rotating presidency of the EU, opposes EU membership for Ukraine. Yet many of the EU's less nationalistic politicians are eager for closer ties to Ukraine. The late Herbert W. Armstrong long predicted that the EU would morph into the final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. This rising empire is currently reliant on Russian oil and gas. It needs a working relationship with Vladimir Putin's Russia, yet it also does not want to see Putin push his borders too far west. The fact that the EU is starting accession talks with Ukraine is a sign that European leaders want to integrate at least the western portion of it into their empire, even if that means partitioning the country. To learn more, read Bible Prophecy Comes Alive in Ukraine by Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury. China is expanding its network of electronic spy stations on Cuba, the Wall Street Journal reported on July 2nd based on new satellite imagery. The development worries American analysts, since the bases could give China advanced eavesdropping capabilities just 100 miles from the U.S. coast in Florida and just 70 miles from the U.S.'s Guantanamo Bay naval base. The report follows a landmark revelation last year saying Chinese and Cuban officials were in the early phases of building a joint military training base on Cuba's northern coast. China is also strengthening its position in Venezuela and Nicaragua, which, like Cuba, lie astride key U.S. shipping routes. The U.S. depends on these routes for shipping and receiving critical commodities. There is a dangerous reason why China is so interested in establishing its presence so close to the U.S. coastline. A foreign power controlling the Caribbean could cripple the U.S. economy by restricting its access to oceanic shipping. To learn more about where China's actions will lead, read Preparing to Storm America's Castle. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
John 6:44, of course, says that God has to open our minds to this truth. He's the one that has to take the action initially, but we certainly have our part to play. We've got to respond to that. We've got to do something with this knowledge. A few more passages here before we conclude. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 16. It says, "And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them,
and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. I mentioned that verse in 2 Chronicles 7, where it said that the glory of God filled the house. It filled the temple. And in the New Testament, we learn that the temple today is the church of God. And what makes the church of God glorious, it's not to say that the people, the members of the church, are perfect, not yet, but that's the aim, Matthew 5:48. But what makes the church or God's family glorious is God's presence right at the center, right in the middle. That's where the glory comes from. The more God comes into our lives, the more we're just going to radiate God's righteousness. The more our light will shine, as Jesus said in Matthew 5, verse 17 here. It says, "Wherefore, come out from among them, and be you separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." You see this sort of admonition in the scriptures over and over again. Come out of this world. We're not part of this faction or this grouping or this political party. We're the ambassadors of Christ. We're God's people. We're God's family. If we come out, verse 18 says that he'll receive us. Notice what he says, and will be a father unto you. If we come out of this world, the Father will receive us, God the Father. God is a father because God is a family. That's God's purpose and plan for man. He's reproducing himself. If we come out of this world and we're separate from it, God will receive us. The Father will receive us. Herbert Armstrong said in this sermon he gave, he was talking about the purpose for the church, God's church, back in 1982. And he was saying this to God's church, to God's family. We are to come out of this world and no longer be part of it. I don't think we get that. He says, now get this. I don't think you fully understand it. We are to come out of this world and be no part of it. We just don't want to have anything to do with it. We heard a message over the weekend about purity. That's a subject you see over and again in the Bible from beginning to end. Purity, holiness, righteousness. This world is full of sin. You can see that in the passage we went through, 2 Timothy 3. It's just full of sin. And it's not easy to put away the sins of the flesh, the sins of addiction, whatever the sins are. I mean, and our ministers are counseling with people that do come from, in some cases, pretty wretched backgrounds. But we've seen some miraculous examples of people coming into God's family, God's church, that have put away some wretched behavior and have lived anew in Christ. He'll show you the way. He'll lead you out of captivity. If we follow in his steps, Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, he'll clean up our lives. And that's really what you want to do if you want to do more for God's family, for God's church. You really do have to apply these truths, these instructions, these admonitions personally. And make changes. I mean, people coming into God's church come in knowing that they have to change. They have to change their thinking, their behavior. They have to change their whole outlook on life. They have to change the things that are important to them, the things that are meaningful, their pursuits. Verse 18, it says, let me just go back and read it again. Be separate. Don't touch the unclean thing. Before that, come out from among them, and I will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. We're, as Mr. Armstrong said in that same message, we're to be separate and peculiar. We're very different, and we should be, because we just don't want to be stained by this world. We want to be cleaned up. We want to have our hearts in God's work. We want to get behind this all-important work that we're involved in. You can read more about just how peculiar and different God's people are in 1 Peter 2. But for the sake of time, let's go over to Romans 12. Romans 12 in verse 1, it says, this is Paul writing again, I beseech you therefore, brethren, or brothers, family members, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Make sacrifices for God. Be willing to serve God. That's not normal. That doesn't come naturally. To sacrifice means that, I mean, it hurts. It's not something you want to do. Verse 2 says, and be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We need a new mind. God wants to transform us into a God being. That's the truth. I mean, read Genesis. It's in the first chapter, Genesis 1:26. Let us make man in our image and likeness. In our image. Let us. It was God and the Word at the time. The Word came in the flesh as Christ later. And when he did, Christ said, this is my beloved Son. And he's preparing the church to be his bride, his wife. Revelation 19. The world doesn't understand this, even the traditional Christian world. That's why Mystery of the Ages is so powerful and profound, because it lays it all out there. You get the whole story. Notice verse 3. It says, for I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God has dealt to every man the measure of faith. Don't think more highly than you ought to think. I mean, this is the opposite of what you see there in 2 Timothy 3, the high-mindedness, the pride, the vanity, the boastfulness. Humble yourselves, like 2 Chronicles 7:14 says. Humble yourselves before God. Turn to God. Turn away from wickedness. Mr. Armstrong said about this verse, it was in that same sermon. He said, we still have not been fully weaned from the cares and interests of this world. I mean, he was talking to church people, God's family, and some of you probably know well that history, where most of God's people turned away from the truth. They fell away from this precious truth. And now there's just a tiny fraction that have continued on. And if you know anything about this work, I mean, it's miraculous what God's been able to do with just a handful of people. And we could use a few more. We could definitely use a few more. But we've got to be willing to sacrifice and to put away sin with God's help. Romans 8. Actually, we could skip that one too, Sam. Let's go back to 2 Timothy 3. So this was the passage I was going through at the start. All of these 18 subjects, God saying, this is how it's going to be in the last days. Subjects that a lot of people today, they don't want to really address because the solution involves repentance. So in 2 Timothy 3, I think we left off at verse 5. It says it has a form of godliness. I mean, it sounds righteous. We talk about tolerance today and it sounds so nice, doesn't it? Hey, we just want to tolerate any kind of behavior. God doesn't think that way. God tells you what behavior is right and what behavior is wrong. And man's job is to accept it. Who would have thought we'd be addressing certain things today, like we are, even 5 or 10 years ago? We are so far removed from God.